Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hey, everybody. Happy Party Friday. Welcome to the Chuck and Julie Show. I want to say welcome to all of the folks on Zoom. If you ever want to join us on Zoom, and you can control your mic and your audio there, you don't have to be on if you don't want to, but just go to zoom.us, and the Zoom meeting number is 209-576-423. That's 209-576-423. You can always join us that way as well. Got a lot going on today. First, I want to let you know, Chuck is not here today. Normally, when Chuck is not here, he's on assignment, which is secret code for playing golf. Today, though, however, he has a funeral that he had to go to. Well, actually, a memorial service. Jim Shepard, who is the owner of Southeast Denver Graphics, printed the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle really since its inception, died earlier this year. He's being buried at Fort Logan. It just took a while because of COVID and everything. So today they were having the ceremony. And so Chuck is going to that, but he'll be back here on Monday. A lot going on in the show today, sponsored as always by ColoradoCitizenPress.com, Colorado's conservative voice, a great website to check out every day. And you get the news, basically, like we say, truth straight up about what's really going on. Also by Denver Cenogenics, and we'll tell you a little bit about that in a second. Patrick Neville coming up with a weekly minority report, Representative Patrick Neville. Lindsay Singer coming up at 3:20 with Colorado Rising Action, two really important ballot initiatives, I think, made it onto the ballot. One of them definitely did, and another one I think they were going to have a count in by today. Lindsay will update us. But these are essentially ballot initiatives, I think, that accomplish a couple things. One, I think they'll pass because essentially they protect taxpayers. One is for a tax cut, which is, hey, who's not for that, for everybody, not just Jared Polis's friends. And the other one would be to say that we have to vote on fees. One of the things the legislators do here in Colorado is they get around the Tabor Amendment, which says voters have to approve tax increases, by calling them a fee, which is completely cheating. And so those are going to be on the ballot too. And I think those are going to be some good issues that hopefully will help drive, you know, I don't want to say necessarily Trump supporters, but I think populists, people who, you know, your basic working families that we hear so much about, I think it's the kind of thing that's going to drive them to the polls and encourage them to get out and vote. And I think that any of those people would say, hey, I'm also for Donald Trump. So those are two good things. And then at the bottom of the hour, I've got some video to play for you. There's another kerfuffle, and that's a mild word for it, going on, a police brawl, basically, with protesters earlier this week. The actions of one of the Denver City Council members there, Candy C. DeBaca, I mean, shocking. The mayor of Denver said he's never seen anything more disturbing. On the other hand, though, I'm going to talk about something you aren't going to hear anywhere else. The mayor is also accountable. I think whatever you think about those police officers' actions, those police officers were put in a no-win situation by the mayor, and they were set up by the protesters and by Candy C. DeBaca. So we'll talk about that. But want to start off with Patrick Neville, Colorado's minority leader. Hey, Patrick, thank you. Happy Party Friday.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me.
So one of the things I wanted to lead off with, Chuck was at a fundraiser last night, and I guess I'll put a push in here for Matt Durkin, a Jeffco, a DA candidate, and he ran into Randy Corcoran, who is everywhere these days. And Randy mentioned that he thought they were going to be able to file some of those lawsuits that you guys have been talking about. Is that happening soon, at least, or today?
It won't be today.
Okay.
It's kind of one of those things, you know.
Wheels of justice.
I know the legalese being married to a lawyer yourself,
yeah.
But I've been pushing Randy left and right, and he wants to make sure that he does everything, crosses all his T's and dots all his I's, and
right.
That's probably a good thing, because if I had my way, that we would have filed it, you know, weeks ago, but I want to give them the time to do it right and do what's necessary, and I mean, I want folks to understand, like, we will file a lawsuit, and once it's filed, it will be done correctly.
Right.
It will be done with, like, we're not going to, you know, leave any stone, you know, unturned, and we are going to file this thing and do it right. This is not just some symbolic effort that I'm doing. I don't, you know, file lawsuits just to file lawsuits.
It's not from.
I want it to be done correctly.
You know, and I'm like you, you know, I was a TV reporter forever and just my personality, it's like, okay, let's do it now. Now is good, right? And you're absolutely right though, because they're going to be facing, I think it's fair to say, probably an unfriendly judicial system. And so, you know, looking for any opportunity to go ahead and throw it out. So I think you're right. Go ahead. And if people aren't familiar with the legal system, it's really difficult to say, oh, wait, we just thought of this and amend it later. That can be kind of tricky. Well, why don't you explain what it is you want to do with the lawsuits, what they're going to try to accomplish?
Well, essentially, I think, you know, hearing from Randy, I haven't actually reviewed everything he's looking at filing, but I think they're over 600 pages. So there's lots of different avenues to this. There's lots of different plaintiffs that we could rope into it, you know, on all sorts of different angles. So it's really complicated, but it got more complicated with the, you know, the federal decision based on John Roberts. And then I got to be honest with you, Julie, rolling this out just to try to announce how this lawsuit's going to go has gotten complicated because of all the different restrictions and stuff too that might lead to more lawsuits. So it's
every time. Well, I think I was going to say
it's this crazy thing. I'm going, why am I in business school? I should be in legal school. I could make way more money right now.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you about that because every time you turn around, a lot of it, I think what you're trying to do is to stop this massive and I believe unconstitutional overreach by Governor Polis with all his executive orders. But every time you turn around, he's issued another one or changed one, right?
Exactly. And that's exactly my point here. This is way too much power in one person's hands for this amount of time. I mean, he started this in March and he's still doing this over and over and over. You know, I take a look at the Constitution generically and I say he doesn't have the power to do this in the state constitution of Colorado whatsoever. Right. If you look at the statutory rules, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. Okay. Well, if that's the case, then if there's separation of branches, then bring us in and have us take a vote on it. But we haven't done that.
No.
And I know exactly why we haven't done that. It's because people don't want to be on record.
Right.
And that's what has driven me nuts this whole pandemic is whether it's your local public health official making this decision on their own or whether it's the governor, you have elected officials out there that go, oh, I don't want to be on record. That'd be too controversial. So let me pass the buck and put it to this guy.
And yeah, put
and
it to poll.
Make this decision,
right?
But that's not the way our government works.
No, well, I mean,
we hold our elected officials accountable.
And what we saw this week on the last call order alone shows just how ridiculous the whole thing is. So now that the pandemic, I mean, it's not even officially a pandemic anymore, right? Now that the numbers are down, curves are flattened, the deaths are way down, and that's even with the inflated fake deaths, hospitalizations.
We have our best numbers since March.
Oh, I know. Exactly. And so everything is fine, right? I mean, and people know to wear masks and we can get to a whole different topic. But so what does Governor Polis do, though, in the last month as he tells bars, oh, okay, bars now have to stop serving alcohol at 10 o'clock. And the bartenders, everybody gets upset. It's completely stupid, as if somehow or another you can't get coronavirus, you know, at 9:59, but you can at 10:01. Well, then today he changed it, goes, oh, okay, now it can be 11. Okay, well, if it can be 11, right. Why not 2? You know what I'm saying? It's just ridiculous.
It's absolutely ridiculous. There's no science behind it. There's no, it's all political.
Yes.
All these decisions are totally political 100%. And well, that's what's driving me crazy. There's no science. It's not that's why he did a statewide mask mandate. Maybe that would have been appropriate in a certain area of Colorado, but it certainly wasn't appropriate statewide.
No.
We still have counties out there without one case.
Right.
One
single
case of COVID.
Well, and then they use it to prove.
Do they have to go under it?
They'll claim that, well, that's why they don't, because of the mask mandate, which is just stupid. But, you know, again, to go back to the bar thing, and what we see there happening is, because I don't hang out that much at Last Call these days, but I know people who do, and my daughter and her friends do, and here's what they tell me is happening. So what the people are doing is they're just ordering a bunch of drinks at the end, or even just getting the whole bottle, and so they're just staying there and drinking, right? They're just not, and it's, so it's, Polis somehow is not, was trying to convince us that
afterwards.
And then they all go home and drive, right?
Probably.
Exactly.
I hope it's not your daughter, but there's several other folks that go out afterwards. And why do we see the disruption in the streets that we're seeing?
Right. No, I can guarantee you that's not my daughter. But you're absolutely right. It hasn't solved anything. And that all it does is it just hurts businesses. I mean, I got to imagine you probably still are hearing an earful constantly from your constituents and businesses saying, can I open? Can't I open? Can I do this? Can't I do this? It's just ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, absolutely ridiculous. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. And then you've got other things happening, too, that it seems like every time they come out with this ridiculousness, they're trying to cover up for something else. And it's like, for me, I look at that FBI agent that just pleaded guilty, and that's a huge deal. That's a huge story. And this FBI agent pleaded guilty to tampering with evidence to try to actually get a subpoena to spy on the Trump administration.
Right.
And where's the media? They're silent. No. They're totally silent.
You're not going to see
Kyle Clark, you know, do a full segment on Next about how awful this was and how terrible this guy was. But if I walked into a place right now that required a mask and got kicked out for not doing it, Kyle Clark, that'd be the centerpiece of his piece.
Exactly.
I mean, that'd be the whole thing you would report on.
You're exactly right about that. Well, and it's ridiculous. I mean, hopefully you didn't watch the DNC, the convention. I was forced to listen to it in part because Chuck he's way over his head as a political junkie. So he was watching it. But the whole time, you can tell it's a plot. I mean, I know that sounds crazy, but it's not. That's why Polis is doing this, because the whole theme, not the whole thing, but one of the major themes of the convention, Patrick, was them talking, the Democrats talking about how Trump is caused all these deaths and Trump couldn't handle COVID and it's a crisis and he's still not up for the crisis. I mean, you know, the last thing they want is...
And then you have other reports coming out showing very clearly from very unbiased sources saying more people died from heart disease during that first, you know, 2-week lockdown because they were afraid to go to the hospital and then actually died for COVID.
Right. Well, and I mean, it's just, and the thing is again, you look at it, the survival rate, it's like 99.6%. One of the problems they're having with the schools now, I know the Westminster School District opened and one of the teachers tested positive for COVID. Here's the thing, then she was at school, so now they have to send all these kids home. Now, the teacher didn't know she had COVID because she had zero symptoms. She wasn't sick at all, right? So it's, and you know, and the COVID test, as I understand it, if you have any kind of similar kind of virus antibodies that test positive, so you may not even have it. And yet all of a sudden, 125 kids on their second day of school got sent home, even though none of them are at any kind of risk and the teacher wasn't even sick.
Right. It often depends on the type of test, especially if they're using the antibody test.
Right.
This is so wildly inaccurate. The one that shocked me was actually I saw a post from Leslie Hollywood who talked about this, and they actually, I just really can't grasp my head around the logic of the teacher team here. But, okay, we're going to do classes remotely, but you can send your kids to the YMCA for $55 a day so that you can monitor your kids while they get taught remotely.
Right.
But you can send them in person.
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
I know you're
taking crazy pills, please. Like,
it's insane.
They're still in person. why do we have to add a middleman to the middleman to the middleman?
It is. I mean, and we got an email from there. A lot of, and I, you know, congratulations to them for thinking of it. A lot of the various, some of the kids programs that are out there, right? During like summer camps and things like that. Are saying, hey, you can drop your kid out. One of them, it was $1,200 a month. I'm like, wait, my kid's $1,200 a month. It's like, I'm going to build a school and hire the teachers myself. But I mean, you're absolutely right. And so the kids now, rather than going to school where at least they're in the same classroom with the same kids, now they're being sent to places where they're mingling with all kinds of people every day.
Well, and here's what's so crazy. They're encouraging programs like this that add a middleman to the middleman to the middleman.
Right.
But then actively discouraging, if you want to actually create a homeschool pod, actually pay a teacher really well,
you're racist.
Discouraging that and calling you a racist if you
do that. I mean, and we're not even making that up, guys. If you're listening and you're like, what? No, that's too crazy. No, that's absolutely true. Denver Public Schools, there are, I've got friends who are in Denver, kids are in Denver Public Schools, right? And they are all getting together and hiring a tutor. Number one, they all work, so they have to do something with their kids. Number two, they realize, I mean, every parent who went through this in the spring, you were there, Patrick, saw what a joke it was, this online learning. And so then they all got letters from the school district, Denver Public Schools, really saying you're racist if you do this, right? As if somehow or another, African-American parents don't want their kids to be educated, you know, so they're not going to be part of this. I mean, I have to tell you, we had a conference call with our son. He starts school Monday. It's going to be one of those hybrid things, one day on to, you know, half online. And bless his heart, his teacher, I'm going to give him a shout out, Mr. Mail at the Academy of Charter Schools here. He was kind of like, I don't know. You know what I mean? We're all going to do our best. Parents are asking me about grades. I don't know. He said, we're just going to have to see. Maybe we can come back full time this, you know, in September. Maybe we can't. I mean, it's just, and Polis, I think Patrick, a lot of this just goes to him because I think he could, if he wanted to, call everybody in and put a stop to the nonsense. And instead, he's just creating more of it.
Oh, if he actually wanted to, you know, actually stand for his own principles, he's supposedly this advocate for school choice and whatnot, he could actually stand up and actually do something about this. And hey, both the House Republican caucus and Senate Republican caucus actually called on him to do this, right. And he hasn't. So it's because he's run by the teachers union, just like every other Democrat out there. He doesn't want to make the teachers union too mad. He's okay making, you know, a couple statements against them to make him look good in the press. But when it truly comes down to it, he's run by the teachers union. He's run by the Gill Foundation. He's run by the Walmart Foundation, as we found out too, because he's, you know, he's actually letting these folks, you know, between the Gill Foundation and the Walmart Foundation, they're actually paying for staff on Polis's staff that are writing these executive orders.
Right.
So, I mean, he's bought and paid for just like anyone else. And here this is supposedly this guy who's worth hundreds of millions of dollars that can't be bought and paid for.
But he absolutely is. Well, hopefully your lawsuit will challenge that. Let me ask you, I mean, this in terms of the, you know, you're aware politically, and looking at the DNC and, you know, the convention, I got to wonder if their whole betting on COVID is going to backfire, because I got to think as schools are supposed to start, as more parents are struggling, as you got kids going to school one day, then because somebody had a cough, they have to all go home. I'm wondering if people are fast beginning to approach the point where even just regular people, non-political people, just stand up and say, hey, enough is enough. You know, we don't buy this anymore. There is no pandemic that's going to kill us all. We just don't buy it.
Well, I think he's betting on the fact that he's hoping, Biden that is, Biden's betting on the fact he's hoping there's going to be enough of the Republican establishment to get so mad at Trump that they actually stand with Biden over Trump. And we're starting to see that. Yeah. I mean, it starts with Kasich and those guys, but I mean, Kasich is pretty irrelevant at this time, but there are several others. I mean, when we were doing these reopening rallies and stuff too, that, you know, the establishment, you're so terrible. This is so bad. This is so bad. And, you know, I think they're hoping for more folks like that to get on board. So we'll see if it's effective or not. I mean, it's sad because I think Trump actually has the same kind of establishment guys working for him in many circumstances. But, you know, Trump's not definitely not that way. Trump is his own man. He's actually done a pretty decent job. If I had any critique of him, I think it's because he actually probably didn't reopen enough.
Right. Not exactly.
But, yeah, compared to what the establishment wanted, they wanted to shut us down and lock everyone indoors for a long time. And so Trump's now pushing the opposite. And I think that's where the public's going. And I think the public is fed up with this. And we've been stuck indoors long enough. And they are fed up, and they see that this is a symptom too of everything that's happened is the riots. I mean, you got all these, you know, people out there, they're bored, tired, and they go out there and they start, you know, getting these crowds. And that's definitely a symptom of what's happened over these lockdowns. And we can't ignore that too. So, I mean, you got to let people be people and let people roam free.
But no, I agree with you. Well, let me ask you just a couple more questions for you. In terms of, you know, the election, I know Colorado Sun did somewhat depressing story about Republican chances. And I have to say, I couldn't totally disagree with all of it, but how, you know, looking into the race, because I know you guys are working hard so that you're not like the only Republican left in the Colorado legislature come 2020. Can you bring us up to date on what's going on there and how people can help?
Yeah, we definitely have a lot of seats that we can target. We're looking at them closely. I think we can add seats to the Colorado House. I think it's going to be tough to actually win the House this year.
Yeah.
Obviously, just like years past, too, all the big donors are looking at the Senate and looking at the Senate to try to win the Senate. I think the Senate's going to have a tough time, too. So I think the key is to keep numbers close so that if we do get enough momentum on certain big issues, we can actually, you know, win one or two Democrats over to make sure those big issues don't happen. So what we're doing is if you go to takebackco.org, that's our website where we're encouraging small dollars donors to go to, and also folks that just want to volunteer and get active to go to. And it's tough for me too, because everyone's telling me like, oh, what seat are you targeting? Which areas are you going after? Every time I say something like this, the establishment Republicans use it against me.
Because
they would almost rather hand it over to the Democrats.
Yes.
Get some goodwill with the Democrats going, oh, Neville's going after this seat. That's what happened 2 years ago.
Okay.
On several of my seats. So Neville's going after this seat. So, you know that, but, you know, do me a favor later.
Yeah.
I'm being pretty secretive about the seats we're actually going after with our 527.
Well, I think if folks are wondering about that, like you said, takebackcolorado.org is a place to go where you can give help and find help. And it's not brain surgery, right? I mean, I think we won't put you on the spot by saying, what are you targeting? Because, you can figure it out, right? There's certain seats that are winnable and certain ones that aren't, and it just takes a ground game. All right, well, Patrick, anything else you want to say or add that I haven't asked about that's out there?
I can't think of it.
All right. Well, brilliant on my part and your part. Hey, listen, thank you then for your time. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Julie.
All right. Patrick Neville there, state minority leader. Takebackcolorado.org is the website to go to. I think there's a lot of obviously fighting going on by the Trump campaign, stuff going on here. But I think, the real help and where we can really make a difference, I think, is in the legislative races and in some of the local races. And I agree with our friend Anil Mathai, who always says local, local, local. So I encourage everybody, just go to takebackcolorado.org. A lot of information there. Hey, want to switch gears a little bit, although we're still sticking on the election. I see Lindsay Singer has joined us on Zoom. Lindsay, if you want to put on your microphone, turn on your microphone and your camera. There you are. Lindsay Singer's with Colorado Rising Action. And once again, Lindsay, I just want to say you guys do a great job and a better job than I've seen Republicans do in Colorado in a long time of keeping people up to date on what's going on and getting people active. So number one, thank you for doing all of that. And thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me back. Good to see you, Julie.
All right. So let's talk about a couple of ballot initiatives. One of them I know definitely made it on that you guys were supporting. Another one has like billions of signatures over. I don't know if it's been okayed yet, but why don't you bring us up to speed on those?
Yeah. So the one that was officially approved is the tax cut. It's an across the board, smallish tax cut, but it's better than a tax increase, which didn't make it on to the signature requirement. So,
okay.
But that actually says a lot, I think, about where Coloradans are at on taxes, and we can talk about that a little bit later. But the other one that you're talking about is the Vote on Fees initiative, and we turned in over 196,000 signatures, and they just haven't been officially approved yet, but we're confident that it will make it onto the ballot.
Okay, and this is going to be on the ballot coming up in November. Well, let's go back. What I'm really glad to see, because I think the Democrats tried to get tricky a little bit because they had their own, they were calling it a tax cut initiative. That was the title, but it wasn't a tax cut. It was a tax increase, but that won't be on there. So we won't have that confusion, right?
That's right. And it was a tax cut for some people, a very large tax increase for some other people. But that's where the confusion was. But they, they blame the coronavirus on not being able to get signatures, but it's really because they couldn't get people outside of the Denver Boulder area to sign on to giving them more money.
Yeah. I gotta say, people in Boulder and Denver, we used to live in Denver, are nuts. It's like, I don't know why Denver voters and Boulder keep voting for tax increases. It's like, sure, have more of our money. It's like, okay. But let's talk about that, I think, because you hit a good point. And I think this says a lot about where voters might be in terms of a lot of issues. But what did you guys find out? And explain what this tax cut would do if people vote for it, which they should.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. It's probably the most simple thing you'll see on the ballot. It's just a tax cut, a 0.1% tax cut. I think the number, it's from 5.8. I don't have the exact number right in front of me, but it's across the board. So every single person will get this small tax cut. And it just shows that people want, you know, whether it's $40, you hear Democrats say, and this is always the argument, is that it's only $40. You know, you're not going to miss that. But that's such a patronizing argument because, you know, $40 to some people, it's better than giving the government.
It's $40, Well, and not only that, what they do, the government, not they being the government, is every time you turn around, they kind of nickel and dime you here and there. So anytime you can cut some of that out. Well, what did you guys find? You know, because the government is saying, oh, we don't have any money because of coronavirus, which to me is ridiculous because I say to Polis, well, just open up the economy then and then you'll be fine. But what I mean, they were saying, I was kind of wondering whether people would be like, oh, well, the government's going to need more of our money. But apparently not. Right. People are saying, no, we need more of our money.
Right. I mean, you get out of the state capitol in Denver and everyone else is saying, no, we're not going to give you more money. But I think, you know, we also see stories coming out of people in state government who are making over $100,000 who are getting raises. So at the same time as you're asking for more of our money because you need it so badly because you had to cut out of the general fund, you're giving raises to these people who are making, you know, they're not on the unemployment lines right now.
Well, yeah, none of them are. None of the people who've closed us down are in the unemployment lines. And did you see, and I don't know, maybe, I don't mean to catch you unaware, but did you see the stories about Jared Polis, who's a multi-bazillionaire himself, is raising money from private donors to fund staff in his, he's creating new positions in his office, and then he's getting money from outside organizations, charities so-called, to fund those offices, and then they write laws that benefit themselves. I mean, you would think that he could maybe get some of them to help take care of, oh, I don't know, maybe some of the things that he's saying we have to cut.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And we also saw, I mean, Jared Polis, Hickenlooper did it with corporations, gave him money to fund positions in his government. It just looks bad. Like, whether that's illegal or not, it looks really bad to have people giving money directly to some of these causes. And, you know, if it's not illegal, it should be. Maybe that can be next year's ballot issue.
He won't pass that. Yeah. I mean, to me, that's just, it's just outrageous that the governor, and I give him, I mean, well, there haven't been a Republican governor in Colorado since Bill Owens, but he did a little bit too. But apparently, if folks don't know, there is this thing where the governor can just like, somebody can come to him and say, okay, I mean, this is what I believe happens. Here's what we want to create. And we want to set up this situation that's good for us. So then Polis creates that position in his office. And then it's called the charitable donation that is given to fund that office. But, you know, the other thing I thought, Lindsay, is it's not like it's free because Polis is saying, well, it's paid for by out. I mean, it's not corrupt. So, you know, but it's paid for by these other organizations. But that's that person. Then they have a computer, their staff. I mean, there's other tax dollars that go to support that office. It's not like it's all free and clear for Colorado taxpayers.
Yeah, it's kind of a shell game. You know, it's, you know, who's paying who, where's the money going, and what is, you know, they can change the wording around by the next election, and we'll be talking about, you know, whatever Polis wants to talk about, and by we, I mean the general public, but it's hard for voters to pay attention to all this stuff, and, you know, you and I look at it every day, all day, and it's still something, you know, that we think about for a day or a week, and then we forget about it by election time, and that's why it's so important that we keep talking about this, because it's really happening.
Well, and then Sandra has just texted in, hey, it's another damn government agency that we don't need. You know, that's true. If some of these positions at Polis is funding were necessary, that just go to the General Assembly, our elected officials, and have them deal with it. You know, let me kind of talk a little bit to you, Lindsay, about politics in general, because I know you guys at Colorado Rising Action are just are so involved in things. I'm wondering, I was looking at some stuff the other day that shows Trump has significantly outraised Biden in fundraising here in Colorado. And what I thought was particularly interesting was Trump has raised like well over $5 million, right? Biden, roughly $3 million. But in 2016, Trump only raised $500,000. And I think that's significant. And then I look at, you know, for instance, we looked at the ease that the people were able to get the due date too late petitions in, right? We looked at how many people were willing to sign the petitions you have on tax cuts and on not having fees. I mean, I got to wonder, what's your sense, I guess, of things out there? You know, you listen to the DNC and it's like it's a slam dunk, Biden's going to win and Democrats are going to control everything for the rest of our lives. But what do you see? I mean, is there a reason for hope, I guess?
Yeah, I think there is. So I heard a stat recently that something like 68% of people are afraid to say what their real political views are or who they would really vote for. And I think that's really telling, you know, there's probably a lot more support for Donald Trump in even in Colorado than we think, but you know, it's going to be tough for him to win in Colorado. I think if he can tighten it a little bit, that gives our U.S. Senator Cory Gardner a better shot. You know, we'd much rather have Cory Gardner there. He's done some really great things for Colorado, and he is a million times better than Hickenlooper.
Right.
As corrupt as they get.
So
I think there is some hope, but there's big groups of people in Colorado, especially in some important counties like Arapahoe County and Jefferson County, you know, mostly women who don't like the way that Trump talks. And I get it. I totally get it. But let's you know, if we can tighten that up a little for Donald Trump, it'll just help Cory Gardner and everyone else down the ticket as
right.
well. But
you know,
I think it's really important. That's why these ballot issues are so important, because even if someone, like we saw in 2018, people will vote against a Republican candidate, but they'll still also vote against a tax increase.
Right.
So that's why I'm hopeful for the vote on fees. We have an uphill battle for that too. And maybe we can get into the details so people know, but
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
and explain that real quick too.
So the ballot language is complicated. That's why we have to keep talking about it, but it's not very straightforward. But really what it is, I'll go back to the beginning. Enterprises, because not all enterprises are bad. Enterprises like state parks, for example, you go to a state park, they might increase their entrance fee every year, but you're still choosing to go to that state park. That's an enterprise, how they were meant to be.
Okay.
But some of these new enterprises are like the hospital provider fee, the insurance fee that they put on are, it's mandatory. If you have to go to a hospital, you have to pay this fee. If you have to have health insurance and there's a fee on your health insurance. So those are taxes. I mean, that's completely not what an enterprise is supposed
right.
to be. And those are the things that we're trying to put an end to. So
okay.
we want to say, if you're creating this enterprise and calling it a fee, then it's actually a tax. It's a mandatory tax where, you know, voters should have a vote on that because the taxpayer Bill of Rights. So,
right. Well, and that's just talk about it. I mean, to me, it's like outrageous that, okay, so I have to pay my health insurance and the premiums to the health company, right? Mm-hmm. But now the state is saying, oh, we're going to put a fee on that. So it's not even, they're not even called like a sales tax. Like if I buy something, you know, there's a sales tax on it. And groceries, there's not a tax on certain grocery items. But this is, if you have insurance, the state is charging a fee on top
of
it.
And the state is telling you have to have insurance.
Right, right. So, okay. And this would, because in Colorado, we have the Tabor Amendment, which says if they're going to raise taxes, they have to ask voters. They've learned the hard way that voters keep saying, no, you can't raise taxes.
Right.
So they're like, okay, now we're just going to raise money. Like you said, it's another shell game, right? We're
right.
going to call it a fee over here. Now, I think that's brilliant of you guys to say, okay, call it whatever you want. We still have to vote on it.
Yeah.
And I bet, I don't know, is there any organized opposition to it?
There's not organized right now, but there will be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that, you know, the Democrats and Jared Polis are nervous about this and the tax cut. They see this coming. They want to have a gas tax. I think that's the next one we'll see next session. They want a gas tax, and this would make that so they have to ask voters.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And
I think I think from what I've seen, that's why they put it off till next year, because people are like, no, we don't want to raise our gas tax. So hopefully that'll go down. What about, are you guys playing at all in the national popular vote issue?
Yeah. And that's a good one to talk about, because I think people are confused which way to vote. So on the national popular vote, we're voting no. It's basically just giving us a vote on the same thing that the legislature voted on. They approved it, but we're saying this should have gone to the voters in the first place. Right. And we're saying no.
Right. So that's, yeah, it is confusing. And you're right. So just say, just remember no, right? It's like no on tax cuts, no on fees, no on national popular vote. They're gonna, because they try to pretend, oh, you know, one person, one vote, but they leave out the fact that I mean, just look what's happening in California and Illinois and New York. And it's like, if you want that to happen in Colorado, then you support national popular vote. If you don't, if you want Coloradans to have rights and have their vote matter, then you want to vote no on that. I think we're going to see a lot of money in that race. What do you think?
Yeah, I think right now, I think it's 78% of the money in that race is coming from California.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, if there's anything else you need to know, yeah. California is trying to pass this in Colorado so that their population can take our votes.
Thank you. Let me find a couple questions. Anything else that you guys are working on that you want folks to know about?
Those are the big things. I do want to do a shout out. If anyone has groups and you need someone to come and talk to you about any of these, the vote on fees, tax cut, national popular vote, email me at info@coloradorisingstateaction.org.
Okay. Give that again in case people weren't.
Info@coloradorisingstateaction.org.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's great because I think you're right. As we get closer, a lot of times things start to gear up after Labor Day traditionally. And I think there are going to be a lot of ballot initiatives. And as you said, some of them are confusing, deliberately so, on some people's part, really. I think you guys have done your best to make it straightforward. So that's good to know. So, okay, well, Lindsay, hey, thank you for your time. Just check in with us too. And I know you do a great job of keeping everybody posted on what happens with that fee, but I think you're pretty confident it's going to make it on the ballot.
Yeah, I think it would. Well, I don't know why it's taking so long, but we did a lot of our signature gathering with the tax cut. So I think it'll make it on.
All right, ma'am. Thank you very much. Have a great Friday. All right. Thank you. All right. Thank you to Lindsay Singer there with. So if you want to get information, info@ColoradoRisingStateAction. I'm going to switch gears now. I want to talk about something that's been going on in Denver. But I think that it affects all of us. I don't know if you've seen, Channel 7 actually did an interesting story on it. The headline was something along the way of conflict between protesters and cops sparks City Hall war of words. We've got some videos that I want to play for you on this, but I want to sort of set the scene here. What happened was the police were trying to take down a homeless camp, I guess you would call it, at 29th and Glenarm in sort of north downtown in the Five Points area. And it had been going on, and here's what the mainstream media is not telling you. This had been going on for a couple of days, right? It wasn't just what this one video that we're going to play shows, okay? It'd been going on for a couple of days. And what I think people need to understand, we'll play the video and you can decide on the police officer's actions on your own, okay? I have thoughts on that. But I think you got to keep in mind a couple of things, and that's what I want to talk about. Hey, and we can open it up for questions too, 888-627 or comments. 6008-888-627-6008 if you want to call in. But what I want people to know are a couple things. Number one, those street officers that you're going to see in this video, I believe were number one set up by the protesters and by Denver City Councilwoman Candy C. DeBaca. They were hoping to have happen exactly what happened. But even worse than that, I think they were betrayed. They were placed in a no-win situation by Denver's Mayor Hancock and the police leadership. They sent them in there knowing this was going to happen, knowing that this was going to erupt into what it erupted into, and they put those cops in a completely bad situation anyway. So to set the stage, I'm going to play you one video, and what it shows is this all started on the 18th, okay? It all started on Tuesday. So the cops show up, and you're going to see a videotape with one cop starting to put the police tape around this little area, right? And they do that when they're going to put a notice up that says there's going to be a sweep, right? And then, though, Candy C. DeBaca shows up, the Denver City Councilwoman, points out accurately that the police have to give these people notice, and so then then what happens is the police officers take the tape down. And I'm like, what kind of idiot sent those poor officers out there to do that in the first place? So let's just go ahead and roll that video too, because I want you to see this had been going on for at least a day or so. The trouble had been brewing before the brawl. So Thomas, if we could just play that, the cops putting the tape up and then down video. And what this is a tweet I took. So somebody, one of the agitators said this guy was a bad police officer.
Did you run open and chat? Couldn't prove a crime, so I guess he's just gotta go.
Huh? So they're harassing him.
No arrival. No crime. I'm acting.
How much money do you think this will cost the city? It's a waste of everyone's time and energy.
See, they're taping the cops here. So here's my question. Why do they send the cops out there, number one, to put the tape up, and then send them back out there to take the tape down? I mean, that's just stupid, right? They know that was going to go on. The next videotape is something that Councilwoman Candy C. DeBaca broadcast. She did a live Facebook thing on it, right? And what I want you to know before we play it is a couple things. You don't hear this because we had to edit the tape. You can't play the whole thing. But one of the protesters, the agitators, admits at the end, after all this is done, she says, "We were all trying to get arrested, but it didn't work out." What happened is the cops arrested one guy. They don't tell you this in the mainstream media because he pulled a gun. It was a fake gun, as it turns out, a BB gun, but he pulls a gun. He's a person that gets arrested. And then they're complaining about a Denver police officer pulling his gun. Well, that's why that officer pulled his gun. But the other agitators are saying, hey, the plan was for us to all get arrested too, but it didn't work out. So realize that when you watch this videotape, the protesters had set things up. City Councilwoman Candy C. DeBaca, absolutely aware of it because she's been going back and forth to this scene and she's there taping it all. They had set it up to provoke the cops into taking some kind of action. And you'll see when you watch the whole video and go to Candy C. DeBaca's Facebook page, you can see the whole video there. You can see the cops keep trying to stand back and the agitators are getting in their face. They're actually putting their hands on some of the officers, right? Doing everything they can to provoke the cops. And then they take pictures of what happens. You're going to hear Candy C. DeBaca urging the people to let the police hit them so they can then sue the cops under the new law that the state passed that holds cops that says they could be held liable. And then at the end, you're going to see Candy C. DeBaca trying to organize the people, making sure that they get their names and addresses so that she can help facilitate the suit. So Thomas, if we could go ahead and roll this second piece of videotape too, the Candy C. DeBaca Facebook tape. Now that's a Denver City Councilwoman there who was taping it. Now, did she step in to try to intervene, to try to calm things down. She did not. Worse than that, what she did is she tried to escalate it. You heard her say, that was a councilwoman saying to the protesters, let the cops hit you so then you can turn around and sue them. And then afterwards, and we had to edit the tape, we couldn't play it all because it's really long, but she's saying, that's, somebody got a piece of paper here. That's got everybody's names and phone numbers who were hurt. The officer, the Denver mayor said that he could not, I just could not believe that a public official was doing what was happening. I haven't seen anything that disturbing since I've been in public office. I mean, he's upset at Candice DeBaca. So I want to talk a little bit about this. And if you guys want to weigh in, 888-627-6008, 888-627-6008, because I think there is a lot to be aware of here. And I think it is the kind of thing I think that just has implications for all of us. You saw the one cop with the baton, right? Did you notice that? He was kind of, you know, he's getting a lot of flack on social media and in the department for hitting people with his baton. But did you notice what happened is some of the protesters, they grabbed his baton. Okay, so that'd be like trying to grab the cop's gun or something like that, right? That's something he has. It's part of his police gear, right? You don't grab the police baton, right? So he's taking a lot of flack. And what you're seeing sometimes in some of the other media isolated shots of him hitting the people, but they don't show what happened before. You see the cops then, and I'm saying, who is in charge of these poor cops? And let me say poor cops, but they get sent out there, okay? Why they were sent out there, it's not even really clear because the protesters had actually taken down the homeless camp, so it was gone. The police tweeted that they were responding to a disturbance call. So my question is, did the protesters set up a fake disturbance call to get the cops there, or did the disturbance come? I mean, it's not clear at all why the cops were back there in the first place, but they had been out there back and forth for a couple of days, and they knew that it was problematic. When you look at the tweets and the texts and you follow, what you see are the protesters showing up and then sending out the message to their network saying, hey, get down here, literally saying, get down here. We've got the cops down here. We need to get everybody down here now. So there is an organized, funded network of people who show up at these things. We have them openly acknowledging that they all were trying to get arrested, that they are trying to provoke the cops into taking action. You've got a Denver City Councilwoman who conveniently keeps showing up to document all of this and is literally shouting, sue the effing cops. This is a councilwoman saying, sue the effing cops, let the cops hit you. Doesn't step in. In the meantime, then what do you see the cops do? They got to just stand there while these people are screaming at them and are rushing them. There's more video that shows, and this to me is appalling. At some point, I don't understand. We're going to have Mark Poff on Monday to talk about what the heck is going on here. But the cops kind of mill around. And then all of a sudden, after standing there, they get in a fight. Then they stand there. They let the protesters shout at them, throw stuff at them. Then they all get in their cars and leave. But what happens is other protesters stand in front of the police cars. They're banging on the police car, telling the officer, calling the officer's name, basically not letting the officers move. Now, I don't know. I'm not a cop, but that would be, if I were there, somewhat of a precarious situation. So to me, I put this all back on Mayor Hancock. Mayor Hancock is creating this situation, okay? And then he's sending the cops in, sending them in to do a job, preventing them from doing the job. So the cops then get injured. The cops have to take action against people. It's all so avoidable. It's what we saw at the pro-police rally when I got punched, right? The cops know there's going to be trouble. They're told to show up, but they're not, but told to stand down, to not do anything. And then when things get ugly, they stand there and then they turn around and then things get even uglier. I don't know if the police union is upset at Candice DeBaca, but if I were the police union, I would be upset at Mayor Hancock for a number of reasons. Number one, why is he letting these tent cities develop in the first place? The city of Denver has an urban camping ban. The citizens of Denver have voted for that ban, right? If you're Mayor Hancock, why would you let even one tent be set up? Then why would you let two tents be set up? Then why would you let 4, 5, 15, 20, 30, right? If you want to stop it in a way that's safe for both the homeless people and the police, you don't let it start in the first place. But instead, he lets it grow. He lets it become a massive problem. And apparently, then when you get enough businesses and neighbors complaining, then he sends the cops in to clean it up. But what does he tell them to do? They can't engage. They can't do anything, right? The protesters know this. They deliberately then do things to provoke the cops, to try to force the cops to take action. They videotape the action. And then you have a city councilwoman turning around and saying, hey, now we're going to sue the cops. To me, again, it puts it's just outrageous that this is happening in the first place. The cops, whether they should or shouldn't have taken some of the actions there, I think that could be up for debate. But I think you have to see the whole videotape. But I go back to, why are they being put in that position by city leaders in the first place, right? And again, it creates a danger for the homeless people there. It creates a danger for the agitators. You've got an agitator pulling out a fake gun. I mean, holy cow, how wrong could that go? Very fast, right? We've now got coming up this weekend, we talked about this on Wednesday, the police in Aurora are saying, okay, there's going to be an Elijah McCain protest. Keep in mind today, Elijah McCain, he was a young man who died while being taken into custody in Aurora a year ago. Okay, his mom put out a statement today, officially removing her name from any of these events, saying, hey, well, I don't want anything to do with the violence that's going on there on both sides, right? So now you've got the protesters who are totally using this not to honor Elijah McCain anymore. His family has said, we don't want anything to do with this, but to cause problems. The Aurora cops know this. So what do? They tell the businesses, hey, you businesses along this area where they're going to be protesting, you should just close down because we know there's going to be looting and violence and we're not going to do anything to stop it. So what do you do if you're a business owner, right? It's sort of like what we were at the pro-police rally. What do you do? Do you want to get in a fight with them yourself? If you're a business person, do you have a gun inside and you say, if anybody comes in and tries to rob me or hurt me or vandalize my business, I'm going to defend myself? Because you know, you're going to go to jail, right? We saw what happened with those people in St. Louis. And I think I blame Aurora Mayor Mike Coughlin for this too. He's not as progressive as Denver's mayor, but why isn't he saying the cops are going to stand up for the citizens? We're going to tell the police either you're not going to go into a situation at all, and we're going to let these homeless camps flourish, and we're going to let our city turn into Portland, or we're going to stop it. But if you're going to stop it, you have to give the police the power to stop it. Again, you look at that video. I've never seen anything like that either, where you've got a Denver city councilwoman not trying to get in there and help, not trying to say, hey, look, I'm an elected official here. How can we de-escalate this? But actively trying to escalate it, actively telling the people, let the cops hit you. Okay. And she's videotaping the cops, and the cops know who she is, right? And if you're a cop there, you're like, oh, great, the city's got my back. I don't think so. And Mayor Hancock sends you in there in the first place. They're going to send you in there, put the tape up, take the tape down. They're going to send you in there, clean up the homeless camp. Oh, no, now just stand there, you know, be, I don't even know what you want to call it, harassed, threatened. And then all of a sudden, nope, now it's time to leave. So now you all march out and leave. And the protesters become even more emboldened. And what do you think is going to happen the next time? And what do you think is going to happen to the people who happen to live around there, right? And what do you think is going to happen to the Aurora businesses who, or the people who are just driving down the streets in Aurora on East Colfax, trying to go about their daily business? And the Democrats, of course, don't mention this at all at the DNC, right? The only thing they talk about is COVID and how, you know, Trump is killing everybody with his COVID policies. They ignore this. And to me, it goes back to, I don't think it's an accident. I just don't think it's an accident. I think Mayor Hancock knows that he's allowing these tents to crop up, these tent cities to crop up. He knows there's going to be trouble. He knows the agitators are organized and well-funded, and they're going to show up and try to cause trouble because it happens every time. And what does he do? He sends the cops in there anyway. And then when the cops take action that they need to take, you've got another Denver City Council member saying, okay, now we're going to sue them. I mean, it's just, it's outrageous what they're letting to have happen. Sandra's saying this morning, Peter Boyles, our friend at 710 KNUS, mentioned that, she heard that Payson police chief gave Sita Baca a phone call so she knows where the police will be. Yeah, I don't know. If I'm the police union, I got a problem with Paul Payson because he also knows somebody, their commanding officers are telling him to go there. They're telling him to come back or to leave. It's just, and it's again, and I don't mean to keep harping on this, but it just, to me, It's taking apart so much of what is important to keep society safe and functioning, right? When you've got protesters pulling out guns, when you've got protesters grabbing police batons, and then you have the police ordered to leave with their tail between their legs, what do you think is going to happen the next time? You know, when you show up at a police rally, we already know, we learned the hard way, they're not going to protect us, right? So are we going to stay silent? Not on your life. Not on your life. Hey, that's going to wrap it up for us. I forgot to talk about Cenogenics. Chuck actually had a meeting with Dr. Julie McCallum this morning, and they went over all of, they do blood work on you. They do a complete physical on you, take a look at everything. And they say, here's some supplements that might help. Here's some lifestyle changes that might help. Here's some diet changes that might help. It's just really been amazing that the change and how much healthier he is now. And don't be like Chuck. Don't wait till you have heart problems before you check it out. You can call Dr. Julie McCallum at 720-387-3681. 720-387-3681, or check them out at cenogenics.com, and that's cenegenics.com. Hey, as always, you can catch our podcast. If you didn't hear something, you want to see that video again, go to chuckandjulie.com. Would love to have you follow us on Twitter. That's Chuck and Julie, at Chuck and Julie One, at Chuck and Julie One. And also love to have you subscribe to us on YouTube, and you can get there from chuckandjulie.com. On Monday, we're going to have Mark Poff on, former El Paso County Sheriff Investigator. I'm going to talk about some of the issues, I guess, facing the police, because he agrees with me. He said people are going to get hurt before this is all over. And he said people, innocent people, people just trying to go about their lives. So we'll have him on. Also, Casper Stockham is going to come on, talk about some of the issues in the race, the congressional race that he is in. But that'll do it for us, well, me, here on Party Friday. Thank you to everybody listening on Zoom. Thank you to everybody listening to the podcast and YouTube world. And thank you very much to Thomas and the folks at BBS. We will see you Monday. Have a great weekend.